innocent. Not the name that you would typically expect for one who is a tax collector, particularly in the times of 2,000 years ago, because tax collectors in Palestine worked for the oppressors, worked for the ones that were the people that had oppressed the people of Israel, were the occupying force at that time, and the tax collectors. So if you wanted to definitely get rich, tax collecting might be a job that you might have, because not only did you work for the Roman occupiers, but you were also given, once you had taken their chunk of exorbitant flesh from your fellow people, you were then allowed to take as much as you wanted to have. And so it is that Zacchaeus, we are told, was a tax collector, a head tax collector, a very wealthy person. And so here is this person ironically named pure and clean and innocent. And I wonder about that. And I wonder about that because I think about when my wife and I had children and we were very intentional about the names that we gave to our children. And I think about from that moment of birth to bris, circumcision 8 days later, when mom and dad are going to declare to the world who the name of this child is, and mom and dad of Zacchaeus said, "This child shall be known as pure and clean and good and innocent." Somehow in those 8 days, that is what they saw when they looked at that child. And I wonder about Zacchaeus. I wonder about Zacchaeus. Did he in fact carry that pureness, that goodness, that innocence that his mom and dad saw, but the rest of the community, because of the occupation that he had chosen, could no longer see it? We know that story very well. We know we make assumptions about people by their occupation. We make assumptions about people by their political persuasion. We make assumptions about people by the color of their skin, the place of origin, all sorts of things that create assumptions in which we don't see the heart and the core of a person. And is it possible that pure, good, clean, innocent Zacchaeus, named by mom and dad in those 8 days from birth to bris, was still that person, but just not seen because of the choices of occupation that he made? Or maybe Zacchaeus was just like the story that we hear from the Kupuna of Molokai, that in which they tell us that we are all born with a bowl of light, and over time that bowl of light is filled with the slights and the hurts of other people, but is also filled with our own feeding of our ego's desires. And so we fill that bowl so that the light is no longer there. And so Zacchaeus, good, clean, pure, perhaps had taken that away from himself. We don't know. We don't know much about his story other than the little tidbits that we are told there in the beginning. We don't know his life story up to the moment. What we do know is that he was indeed reviled. He was indeed reviled because when Jesus speaks to him, the crowd begins to grumble. Tax collector, head tax collector, very wealthy. Why, Jesus, would you be eating with this one? And so we know that he's a reviled person, and probably in many ways is probably ridiculed. Because what else do we know about Zacchaeus? He is very short in stature, right? And I don't know, as I thought about this, whether it's encouraging or discouraging that 2,000 years later, we do the very same thing, that we look at the physical characteristics of somebody, and we, which typically have nothing to do with that person, of which the person has no input on or anything else. We look at those characteristics and we make judgments. We revile, we ridicule by all sorts of things about a person of which they have had no choice whatsoever. And so here we have Zacchaeus reviled, ridiculed. And Zacchaeus gets word that Jesus is coming into town. And Zacchaeus takes it on his own to get out ahead of the crowd and run down the street. And maybe it's because the reputation of Jesus has proceeded so much that he really wants to get the first look. Or maybe it's because Zacchaeus feels that maybe by seeing Jesus, by being seen by Jesus, he may be able to start over. We don't know. We don't know exactly. All we know is that what Zacchaeus does is Zacchaeus encounters Jesus in such a way that his life is utterly changed. And here's the part about the story that I love is that encounter doesn't happen without a sycamore tree. That encounter for Zacchaeus and Jesus does not happen without a sycamore tree. The sycamore tree is this tree that was revered in ancient Palestine. It was revered because it had light yet sturdy wood. It was revered because it had a fruit that was fragrant and full. But it's not those things that were so important that day. It's not the fact that some people think that the sycamore tree may have been the tree that was in the Garden of Eden that Adam and Eve took the leaves from because they're big enough that you can sew into clothing even. That's not it. What was important about the sycamore tree at this time is that it is a tree that has big, sturdy limbs that are not too far off the ground, so a person short in stature can climb up into that tree and be able to be seen. And not only that, it is a tree that not only has boughs that are big and sturdy, but create a great canopy of shade. And so sycamore trees were oftentimes planted on the roads leading into town so that weary and hot travelers might have a place of shade that they may be able to step underneath and take a moment's respite. And so it is that the shade of a sycamore tree invites one Jesus to come underneath that shade. And underneath that shade, one Jesus looks up and sees one Zacchaeus up above him. And in that moment, Zacchaeus sees Jesus, and Jesus sees him. And none of that happens without the sycamore tree. And if you notice, the sycamore tree didn't do anything particularly heroic to make this happen. All the sycamore tree did was be a sycamore tree. Be a sycamore tree as full as a sycamore tree can be, which means to have big, strong boughs, big leafy canopy, provide shade, just be its fullest self as God had created that sycamore tree to be, and being its fullest self was enough. And you think about that, and you think about each person in here, each person in our community, and recognize that what God calls us to sometimes, but rarely, is we are called to be heroic. We are called to sacrifice ourselves for something larger and bigger than ourselves, but most of the time what we are called to be is just that which God has created us to be, our fullest self, unique here, unique here, unique here, unique here, each one unique. And when we are our fullest self, we are then preparing ourselves to make it possible to be that which will help someone else to be able to see Jesus, to see the Christ or be seen by the Christ. What a world it would be. What a world it might well be if all we focused on was just being ourselves that God has called us to be. We might have less need for heroes in the world if more of us just allowed ourselves to be sycamore trees. Allow ourselves to be all that God has created us to be and put that out in service to the world and wait for the moment when the Zacchaeuses of the world come by and need that which we have to offer. Danny has shared with us that we have our... Where did he go? Danny? There's Danny. Danny has shared with us that we have our stewardship campaign coming. He's talked about fearless generosity. And you might think that fearless generosity instead has to do with being heroic and being absolutely brave. But actually, I think fearless generosity has exactly that. Is exactly what happens with that sycamore tree. It is that willingness to be fully yourself and to give fully of yourself. We're not asking anyone here, when you give of your time and your talent or treasure, no one is being asked to go and sell your home. I mean, if you want to, you're welcome to. But no one is being asked to do that. That's not fearless generosity. No one's being asked to go quit your job and do it and give yourself now in full and total devotion to the church. No one's being asked to do that. No one's being asked for such heroic actions. What we're being asked is to do as a sycamore tree, to take a look at yourself, to prepare yourself and say, in this moment, what are the blessings that I have and how might those blessings be used? That's all. And it's amazing how many people are afraid to do just that. And yet, that's what God calls us, to be that which God has created you to be. And the ripple effect when we are those people that God has called us to be is huge. I'm reminded of a story that I was told of the ripple effect that happens. It's a story of a monastery of many centuries ago that had fallen on very hard times somewhere in some other part of the world. Once had been a place that was flourishing with many people. The walls were filled with vines and flowers. The gardens were filled with food and beauty. And the people from the community would come to the monastery. They would have picnics and celebrations. And they would help out the brothers at the monastery. But the place had fallen on hard times. And now there were only 4 or 5 brothers that were left in the monastery. And they were old and tired. And somehow those brothers who once had had the passion of their youth, that had called them to be people of prayer. And those prayers were the places where they allowed their spirit to connect with the Spirit of God, had just become rote and routine. And they barely prayed at all. And the service to the community that once had been the way in which they showed the very presence of Christ to the world had really become something that they just had to do. And they became resentful when it wasn't appreciated. And because they knew they weren't really into it, they became suspicious when people actually act like they did appreciate what they were doing. So there was a no-win situation. The very light that had lit up their face, that had given warmth to their touch, seemed to be gone. And so too did that seem to evaporate from the monastery as well. That as that light went out in them, so too did the light go out in the monastery, and the walls began to crumble, and the flowers began to die, and the people began to quit coming. Why come? It's not a fun place to be. It's just a bunch of grumbling and sputtering up there. And so the place began to fall on hard times. And the abbot, the leader of the monastery, was so worried about this, he didn't know what to do. And he went for a walk out in the woods nearby. And out in the woods nearby, there was a hut. And in that hut was his friend, the rabbi. And he went to the rabbi and he said, "Rabbi, I don't know what to do. I don't know what to do. The monastery is crumbling. The brothers are grumbling. Life is not pleasant." And the rabbi looks at him and says, "I wish I had a magic wand to wave, but I don't. But I can tell you one thing. The one thing that I can tell you is that the Messiah is amongst you." And the abbot said, "Excuse me? Are you talking about the grumbler? Are you talking about the freeloader, the slacker? Are you talking about the dirty, smelly one? Who's the Messiah that is amongst us?" And the rabbi says, I can't tell you, but I do know for sure that the Messiah is amongst you." And the abbot was so thrilled with this news that he goes running back to the monastery, calls together the brothers and says, "Brothers, I got something to tell you. The Messiah is amongst us. The Messiah is one of us right here. The Messiah is right here amongst us." And the brothers looked and said, "What? How's that possible? The smelly one? No, can't possibly be." And they go through the same sort of thing, the grumpy one, the freeloader, the slacker. I mean, who? And then the miracle happens. And the miracle happens is that knowing that amongst them, one of them may well be the Messiah, they begin to look at each other differently. And they recognize that the one who has been grumbling all the time is also one who is mumbling all the time. And why is he mumbling all the time? Because what he's mumbling is he's mumbling prayers for everybody at all times. And maybe no longer should we see him as the grumbler, but now we see him as the mumbler. The one who is mumbling in prayers for all of us. Could he be the Messiah? Possibly. Or the one that is dirty and smelly all the time? Well, he's dirty and smelly because he's the only one of us that's left out there working in the garden all day long, sweating, making sure that there's food on the table. Perhaps that one of service is the Messiah amongst us. Or what about the one that we think is slacking, the freeloader? Isn't that the same one who remembers all the time when our birthday is, remembers the day that each of us entered into the novitiate, remembers that and sends a card to each of us? Maybe that's the Messiah. And what happens is they begin to see one another in a different light recognizing that which is good and wonderful, that which each of them was created to be, rather than things that had perhaps been buried, that had buried that goodness for so long. And as they began to see that in one another, each of them began to see that in themselves. And all of a sudden now, the brothers and the abbot are relating to one another with the very same light, the very same light that they had entered into the monastery decades before. And they're relating to one another in positive and wonderful ways and beginning to work together. And those who were in the community who had become passerbys all of a sudden become stopperbys. And they stop by to see what's going on because they can almost feel the light that is coming away from this place. And as they feel that, they begin to look around and they say, "Your walls are crumbling. Can we help you out? Because it's kind of fun to help these happy monks." And so they begin to help out. And as they begin to help out, they bring their children along because someone's got to take care of the children while we're here. So they bring the children along. The children begin to have picnics. And as they begin to have picnics, they begin to plan the celebrations of their life that they want to have right in this one place. And all of a sudden, because the rabbi has simply said, "The Messiah is amongst you." And because of that, they begin to see one another in different ways. And because they see one another in different ways, they begin to relate and they begin to allow the light of God to come into their world. And that begins to affect the community. And I wonder, is this what happened in Jericho? After Jesus looks up at Zacchaeus there in the sycamore tree and says, "Zacchaeus, come on down here. We're having dinner together." And the people start grumbling. "You don't want to have dinner with him." But he goes and has dinner with him anyway, and Zacchaeus says to him, he says, "You know what? If I have defrauded anyone, I'm going to pay that back fourfold. I'm going to give away half of what I have earned." Is it possible that the people of Jericho now begin to look at Zacchaeus and they see Zacchaeus pure, clean, good, innocent? They begin to see him in the light in which his mom and dad saw him in those 8 days before he was circumcised. They begin to see him in different ways, and because they see him in different ways, he begins to share more. And because he begins to share more, the community of Jericho begins to share more and begins to love more. Is this story about Zacchaeus a story about a community that has felt the ripple effects, of us taking the moment to see beyond the surface and to see the reality and the good and the gift that is there? And it's all because of a sycamore tree. It's all because of a sycamore tree. It's all because of people like you and me that might be convinced to be all that we are called to be, and in that process are waiting and preparing ourselves for the moment in which our very actions can help a person to be seen by God and to see God themselves. And as a result, the world changes. And so we come to the table and we recognize that there were a lot of sycamore trees around that table on that last night with Jesus there in the upper room. There were a lot of sycamore trees, but no one was seeing those sycamore trees. In fact, people were instead looking at them, and there was Peter, the bombastic one. That's all they knew about Peter, that he just spoke out no matter what. There were James and John, the sons of thunder, is how we are they're described. There's Doubting Thomas. There's Matthew, the tax collector. So we have these people who are being defined by these roles and we not being able to see them, but they in fact are sycamore trees so full and of wonder and light. And the day will come because like Zacchaeus, they too have seen Jesus and they have been seen by him, that they will strip off all of those things that have once defined them. And Peter, that impetuous one, will now become the one that will inspire. And those bombastic sons of thunder will become the preachers that the world is waiting for. And the doubting Thomas will be the one that will lead other doubters to be able to see. And even the tax collector Matthew may well be the one that helps this community become a community that is filled from the richest to the poorest, sharing with one another. They will become those sycamore trees called to be all that God has created them to be, pieces of a puzzle that come together in this magnificent canopy of a forest that changes the world, and it's because of them that we are here. It is because of them that we are able to be here. And we, like them, are called to be all that God has called us to be. We, like them, are called to be prepared for the moment in which who we are is who the world waits for. And if it just means being a tree that someone can climb up so that they can be seen, so be it. Who knows what it will be, but we are called, like those disciples around the table, unique individuals each, to be ready and prepared to give of ourselves. And so we remember on that evening when they are gathered together, that collection of sycamore trees around Jesus. Then he takes them and he looks at them and he takes the loaf of bread and he looks at them and he says the words that we will know, that we hear over and over and over, those words that call, that the simplest of elements, the wine and the bread, are simply there calling us to be what God has called us to be, that we might be able to, when the time is right, to give of ourselves as God has called us to do, so that others may have life, so that others may indeed be seen. And so with his friends at the table,